Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is Episode 1, released August 5th, 2008.
Okay, so Russ, what species are you going to tell us about today?
Well, basically two species, microworms, Panegrellus redivivus, although you will find other more archaic and less correct names around, and Walter worms, with a species name I can't tell you because nobody's told me. But the overview of the show today is basically the applications of these two nematode worms, materials needed to culture them, sources for the cultures, basic culturing info, some troubleshooting, and frequently asked questions.
Speaking of frequently asked questions, why would I want to keep microworms or Walter worms?
Well, many people would ask that same thing. And my answer would be the same. First of all, they're an easily cultured and nutritious food, mainly for fry. A lot of breeders of fish that are pretty small will want to use things like microworms and Walter worms because in a given sample of either species, you will find some very young worms that are actually smaller than baby brine shrimp. And the diameter of the worms in general is actually slightly smaller than baby brine shrimp. So they're great for live bears, even when they have just been born. They're great for most baby cichlids as soon as they are free swimming, and almost any fry that are big enough. Danios or white clouds or any number of egg layers after they've had infusoria or something smaller for a week or two, depending on their growth rate and the species and so on, they'll be fine with microworms or Walter worms. And basically anyone with fish that will eat them. So small adult fish like guppies or white clouds are fine too. I've had other fish that eat them. Surprisingly enough, coolie loaches like them, even adult coolie loaches, at least mine have, like them. Young Siamese algae eaters, about an inch and a half long, will eat them too. They seem to like them. Quite a few fish, gouramis, kissing gouramis specifically. I remember having one that liked those as well, even though it was quite large. So there are quite a number of fish that like them, but in general, fry or small adult fish.
Okay, that's a good reason. Well, where do you get the worms?
Well, the best place, or maybe the easiest place to find them, and with some assurance that you can find them, is online. Aquavid's a great place for them. But do a Google search on microworms and you'll get all kinds of places coming up. Aquarium clubs, a lot of times you can find members who are culturing them already, or just other hobbyists that you happen to know. I have heard, although I have not seen, that there's a proprietary, like a brand name, that actually sells them in a dried culture form that you can get them and rehydrate them. That's one way to get hold of microworms, at least.
So, is it better to feed them live, though, or is it okay to do it reconstituted like that?
Oh, I'm seeing what you're saying. Yeah. Actually, when you reconstitute it, you start culturing live worms out of that reconstitution.
Oh, so they're kind of in cryosleep.
Something like that, okay. Yeah. I haven't seen those. I just heard of them, so.
Okay.
Who knows? I just go online if I were going to get some.
Okay.
That's actually what I did years ago before online was online, when it was still CompuServe fishnet on a 200 baud modem or whatever it was. And I got my first culture, and it came in a toilet paper tube in the mail.
High tech.
Yeah, many years ago.
Okay, so once I go online and I get my worms, what do I need to do or know to culture them?
Okay, well, you should have a container, and hopefully you have the container before you culture them. Of course, some cultures come with a container, but just make sure you have one way or the other. Some great containers are the food saver style containers that you can get, various brand names, kind that go in your refrigerator and have
like the disposable Tupperware type things.
Yeah, not Tupperware brand specifically necessarily, although it'd probably work, but any brand.
Those disposable plastic things.
Right. Those work great. Some other things that work, yogurt containers or cottage cheese, butter tub type containers, anything like that, sour cream containers, all of those work. But then you need to make sure that they're washed out well. Try to avoid using soap. A lot of times I'll use a little bit of baking soda paste that I'll make with some water. Scrub them out really well. Rinse them out really well, and they're good to go as far as the material or the container goes. But you do need to ventilate the container, and I recommend using a small size paper clip. to puncture a number of holes, probably 30 or so holes in the lid, to make sure you get enough oxygen in there. If you use a small size paper clip, you can avoid big problems with fruit flies. If you use a large size paper clip, or if you heat the paper clip and then puncture it with a heated paper clip, the holes will get so big that fruit flies can get in there, and that's a mess. You don't want that. So
not fun. No. Okay, so there's our containers. What do we need to do to culture them?
Okay. Well, first you need to worry about the culture medium. And people use all kinds of things. I've heard of people using potato flakes, baby cereal. In fact, I've tried baby cereal. I've tried cornmeal, too. I've tried cream of wheat. I've tried all kinds of things. My favorite, currently, what I use, is either oatmeal with a little addition of ground bean flour that I make myself, which is not really necessary. I just like to add it because it complements the amino acids in the beans and the oatmeal complement each other for a higher protein content. But you can just use oatmeal if you want, either quick or regular oats. And you just boil it just according to the package directions. Don't add the salt, though. If it requires that you add salt, just don't do that. Don't need to. And when it cools, I like to put in some mix-ins to increase the nutritional content. I have read some studies that do indicate, despite things that go around on the internet, some people say feeding your microbes, it doesn't matter what you feed them because whatever you feed them is not going to be there anymore, which I don't know if that makes sense or not, but I've read some scientific studies that by improving the nutritional value of the food, you are indeed improving the amino acid profile, at least. Whether vitamins do that or not, amino acid profile of the worms does increase, so the protein value of the worms increases. So I tend to add a little nutritional yeast, maybe a teaspoon per batch of culture medium, which is enough to fill two 13-ounce containers about half an inch deep. That's how much I usually subculture every week. Well, so I have my oatmeal. When it cools, I add some nutritional yeast. That's not the same as brewer's yeast or baker's yeast. Well, it's more like brewer's yeast, but there's something specifically called nutritional yeast.
You can get that in health food stores.
Right, health food stores are a good place for that. You add a little bit of that. I add a little bit of spirulina powder, which I get at the same place, and a little bit of paprika. Spirulina, as well as having protein in it, is also a good source of natural colorants. Carotenoids and so on, which rarely bring out red, orange, and yellow colors in fish, as well as the same thing that paprika does, although I think paprika is mostly something else that's like lycopene or something, but it does the same thing. It's okay. Another natural colorant for the fish. So those I add in pretty small quantities, just a sprinkle or two of spirulina and paprika, but the nutritional yeast is a little heavier. Once I've mixed those in, I put them in a layer in the container about a half an inch deep. You can do a little more, a little less, but that's usually pretty good.
Okay, so we have our culture going.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get to the point when I actually want to feed them to my fish. How do I get them out of the container?
Well, actually, I should tell you this, and I forgot to think about this before, but after you've put the culture medium down, and then you add the starter culture, whatever the source, you put that on top, kind of spread it fairly thinly out on the top, put the
like
lid
the
on.
The worms that you buy online.
Right.
You put those on the medium.
You put those on the medium. You should wait several days before you're even going to get them, unless you get a ready-to-feed culture, which you can find online. But let's assume you start with a starter culture. You just spread it out, close the lid, and then check on it every day. When you look at it, if the worms are viable, and they usually are, they're pretty hardy things, you should start seeing after 2 or 3 days, depending on the temperature, sometimes earlier, sometimes later, but you'll see kind of shimmering. Do you remember, have you seen that,
yeah,
right? You
this know is for the like. Microworms? Yeah.
Microworms or Walter worms, either one. You'll see it's kind of, the surface is shimmering. It's all those little worms, thousands of them moving around on the surface.
It's kind of pretty.
Yeah, and it's pretty visible. And if that's working, you know your goodness working. But you won't be able to harvest them until they start climbing up the sides of the container. Some people recommend roughing the side up with a little bit of fine grade sandpaper. I have not found that to be necessary.
Okay.
The worms just start climbing up the sides after a while. And you'll notice when they start doing that. Make sure though, when you put the culture medium at the beginning, that it's pretty clean. You keep the sides clean so that you'll be able to harvest clean worms. But anyway, the worms start crawling up the sides of the container and just solid walls, sheets of worms. So now back to your question, now that I've answered what I should have answered before, harvesting them. Some people just get in there and kind of scoop them up with their finger. I don't really like to do that. I prefer a cotton swab. I'm not going to use any brand names, but I prefer a cotton swab. popsicle sticks can be used, but I find the cotton swabs work better. You just scrape them carefully off the container, trying not to get any medium with you, because that can pollute water, especially in small fry tanks with minimal filtration. Once you get that in there, some people feel a need to put that into a small container of water, allow the worms to settle, and pour off the water, and do that a couple of times to minimize any substances entering the tank. I've found out if you start out with clean container walls and you're careful about not getting medium up with your cotton swab or whatever harvesting mechanism you use, it's not necessary, in my experience.
It saves time to not do it.
Saves time not to do it, and that's a prime consideration for some of us. So there you go. So now I think it's time to talk about subculturing, isn't it?
Okay, so how often do we need to subculture, and how do you know that it's time to subculture?
Okay. Well, just in case there's anybody out there who's wondering what the heck subculture means. Basically, it means you need to make a new culture from the old culture, because an old culture will start to go bad. And this gets back to your question. After, depending on the temperature, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Sometimes it might last a little more, a little less. But eventually you'll need to make a completely new culture in a different container, rinse out the older container, well, dump out everything in the older container, rinse it out, and start a new culture in there. I've, in fact, found that it's best to have 3 cultures going at once. So every week you start a subculture using maybe a teaspoon to tablespoonful of the older culture to start it.
The culture, you mean, does it include old medium too, or just the worms?
Old medium, yeah. Okay. You just add a teaspoon to a tablespoon of old medium to a new culture, just as if it were a starter culture.
Okay.
And if you do that every week, you'll have a culture that you need to throw away when you're starting your new subculture. You have a culture that's in full production, mm-hmm. and then you'll have this new culture that you just set up that's not producing yet. That way, any given day, you're going to have at least one culture that's producing a lot, and most of the week you'll have 2 cultures, maybe even 3, that are producing.
Okay.
So just do it every week. That's the easiest way. But if you miss a week once in a while, it usually doesn't hurt anything. The warmer the temperatures, the more often you have to subculture, basically.
Okay.
So does that make sense? With instructions,
yeah, so subculture,
like that, you could just do it
once a week, rotating about 3 different cultures.
Right. And just make sure that when you take that oldest culture, and you're going to tell, it might start to get moldy, it might just start to smell, instead of smelling kind of yeasty and sour, it starts to smell just absolutely putrid and horrid, and its colors start to change,
mm-hmm.
you know it's that one needs to go. And so dump it down the toilet, rinse it out really well. If there's any residue, like in a ring that won't go away inside the container, you waited too long, you need to just throw it away and start over. But if you do it every 3 weeks, you shouldn't have that come out.
Start over,
like a new container.
With a new container, not get a new order of worms online.
Right. You don't need to get a new order of worms as long as your worms are still alive. If you've got all sorts of crazy mold going on, you don't see any worms going in any of your cultures, then yeah, you'd need to start over. But as long as you keep that 3-culture rotation going, you should be fine.
Okay. Should we talk about some troubleshooting and questions people often have?
Yeah, we probably should.
Okay. Say someone just received their culture in the mail that they ordered online, and they don't see any worms in it. What should they do?
Well, a lot of times people are not ready for the absolutely minuscule size of these worms. So they'll buy the culture and they won't see any, and then they'll panic, and it actually turns out the culture was full of happy little worms. They're just really, really small.
So people who are just starting out, they're thinking of like garden worms, and these are really teeny tiny little.
Yes, they're really teeny, like maybe a millimeter long. They're teeny, and just a teeny fraction of a millimeter thick. So they should be patient,
okay.
and just go ahead and use it as if they were certain there were worms in it.
Go ahead and culture it.
Go ahead and
do
culture
the medium
it.
And
yes. And just be patient. If after a week of following the culture instructions, you see nothing, nothing is shimmering when you hold the container of worms under a strong light, then you should contact whoever you purchased it from and say, I have a dead culture. But until you've tried that, just wait. I remember someone getting culture from me once, and they cultured it, and they said, I don't see any worms. And I said, I explained to them, I had showed them a picture, and they said, oh yeah, there are worms all over the side of my container. I just didn't know what they were.
They just didn't know what to look for.
Because they were so small, right.
Okay. Let's see, what happens if after several days, you know, you have a culture going, then after several days they don't see any worms shimmering on the surface anymore, and there's kind of a scum of yeast on it. What went wrong there?
Okay, there's a couple of problems that could have happened there. The temperature could have been too hot or too cold. Generally, room temperature is fine. If it gets into the mid to high 90s, that could be a problem. That can kill your culture because they'll run out of oxygen in a container with, you know, the lid. Mm-hmm. Without that much ventilation. So make sure your ventilation is good enough. Also, you could have added too much yeast. Some people add yeast right at the outset of the culture, like before they add the subculture, but they've added their culture medium. They mm-hmm. put a little bit of yeast in there, like baker's yeast, like you'd use to make bread. They'll put a little bit of in there. I say if you put any in, just put a teeny pinch. It's usually not necessary to put any in because enough comes with the worms mm-hmm. that will inoculate the culture medium and yeast will start to grow in it, because the yeast is actually what the worms feed on. Yeast that grows on the culture medium. So a little yeast is good. Too much is bad because it will overcome the culture, produce so much CO2 that no oxygen will exist in the culture and you kill the worms. So that's one. And temperature, you know, too much heat can do the same thing. And ventilation, lack of ventilation, can also do that. So one good thing is to just make sure you check on your worms often. If you're not harvesting your worms every day, just it's a good idea to lift the lid, let it, you know, air out a little bit for a minute anyway, even if you're not going to harvest the worms. It's better just to harvest the worms every day, but make sure that you open the lid for a minute, but don't leave it off because you'll get bugs in it or it will dry out or both. So does that kind of answer that question?
Yeah, okay.
Those are ways to avoid that problem.
Okay. And how about if the worms are shimmering, but they don't seem to be climbing up the sides of the container, what's going on there?
Well, you probably just haven't waited long enough. Usually they'll be shimmering for a few days before they start climbing up the side of the container. If they're mm-hmm. shimmering a lot and are never climbing up the side of the container, you may just have some monumentally stupid worms that are incapable of climbing. And you might need to use a container where you've lightly sanded the edges. But I've never actually encountered that problem where they're not actually capable of climbing up the sides. I just have had a few occasions where they just wait and they don't do it as soon as I thought they should. So then, you know, you can try
population to be higher,
right? You want just wait for them to grow a little bit until the population gets too high, and then they'll start climbing up the side. If it's still not working, then try taking out a third to half the media in the container and replacing it with clean media and trying again.
Okay.
You could try that.
Okay. Here's a big problem for people. Fruit flies being attracted to the microworm culture. How do you control the fruit flies?
Well, the main thing is the ventilation holes. As I mentioned before, small paper clips will keep most of the flies out of your culture with using a small size paper clip without heating it and using the heated one to puncture it. The heated one will make larger holes and they can get in there. Another way to do it is to cut a small hole in and fill that hole with some polyester filter floss mm-hmm. so that the ventilation comes all the way through the floss and then the flies can't get through that.
Okay, and where would you get the floss?
That would be filter floss for an aquarium. You can buy that at most aquarium stores as, you know, replacement okay. for a filter
okay.
Material. Or a open cell foam would do the same thing. I have noticed that on occasion fruit flies will lay their eggs on the surface of the container, and a very few of the larvae will get inside the culture after they hatch. They'll crawl down in through the ventilation holes, mm-hmm. feed on the medium. But the numbers that you're talking with there is really not a big deal. They're such small numbers, it's not a problem. It's only when the fruit flies can actually get inside the culture when it becomes a problem. If a few fruit fly larvae end up in your culture, feed them to your fish. Most fish that'll eat microworms, if they're big enough, they'll eat the fruit fly larvae too, so it's not a big deal.
Okay. Let's see, one more question. What do you do if there's mold in the culture?
Okay. Well, you should discard it, and hopefully you have a clean portion from another of your three cultures to restart it. It's probably best to actually dump the container, discard the entire container that has mold in it, because mm-hmm. it's hard to get all of that out of a container if you have a clean portion of a culture to start another one with in another container. If not, just try to get the cleanest small portion of worms out of that container to start with, and try another culture. If you really have to, you can put some of that culture in a little bit of water and let it sit for a while, and then pour that water over a culture to see if you can get the mold separated from the worms. I haven't noticed this to be a problem if you subculture one culture per week.
Okay. Are there any other observations or things that you want to let us know about?
Yeah, just a couple things. One is, well, people talk about baby brine shrimp versus microworms. I've used both, and I think most people would agree that with baby brine shrimp you'll get faster growth, and that baby brine shrimp are an excellent food in most cases. Baby brine shrimp are more expensive as well. They're not quite as small, so fish can't take them as early, and some people seem to think that baby brine shrimp in certain species of fry can lead to swim bladder troubles. I cannot personally attest to that one way or the other, but I can say that I have raised a lot of fry using microworms as one of their principal foods. I don't recommend them as the only food, because I don't really recommend any food as the only food. But
you need a variety.
You need a variety if you can get it. But I think that they are valuable as a food for mini fry. And if your fry can take them, I think you should use them as part of your fish's diet. So they're good that way. I've also known that fish improve in their ability to eat them efficiently as time goes on. For example, if you have a tank full of guppies and you start giving them microworms, they'll start to eat them, but they won't really realize how to get them very efficiently, so they won't eat mm-hmm. as many. And then after you've done that for a while, they'll actually learn how to pick them off, and they have certain swimming patterns that allow them to catch the maximum number of microworms. Microworms do sink eventually. If you have enough water flow in your tank, they might stay floating for quite a while and allow the fish to pretty much eat them all. Mm-hmm. If you don't have enough flow in a tank, and many times in fry tanks you don't have enough flow, they will sink to the bottom fairly quickly, and that can be an issue. That's great for maybe Corydoras fry. That's where they do a lot of their eating, and that's not a big deal. But for guppies or, you know, danios or whatever, that is not really an ideal place to eat them. So make sure you don't overfeed and thinking they're actually eating them all when they're ending up on the bottom. So
watch when you feed them, to see how many they're actually eating.
How much they're eating. Yeah, and pay attention to the flow in your tank and what it does for your microworms. Make sure to get rid of any uneaten food. Snails and, you know, things like that will eat them if they're on the bottom. Just make sure you have some provision for getting them out, or just siphon them off, whatever. Don't let them sit there and rot, because they will eventually. They survive for several days in water. They'll eventually die and rot. Hydra will eat them too, just like baby brine shrimp. So you may find a tank that gets heavy feedings of microworms or Walter worms. Basically everything that applies to Walter worms and microworms is all the same, except for at least some types of Walter worms tend to stay in the water column longer and some don't. I guess it depends on what you've got. But anyway, Hydra will eat them, and you might find a population explosion of Hydra in a tank that gets frequent feedings. So be aware of that. I just noticed myself that raising triops, you know, the crustacean that they sell mm-hmm. as prehistoric
living
life forms, living fossils, yeah. Triops do really great in there's a little kind of a critical life stage shortly after they've hatched, when a lot of times there's a huge amount of cannibalism in a tank of triops, and also some starvation. it's a tough time for tryups in the like the first after the first day when they metamorphose a couple of times and are able to take that type of food, and for the next 2 or 3 days they often die in that period. But if you give them microworms, they usually do great. Mm-hmm. And I've raised many, many batches of tryups successfully giving them microworms during that period. So they're really pretty versatile for all kinds of things.
Okay. Very good. Are there any resources or websites that would be helpful to know about?
There are, and you can check out some of the resources at aquarimax.com. Of course, this the main page of this website. Under Culturing Microworms, on that page at the bottom, there are some links and resources there, some websites. And check those out. I also have a text version. It's not a repeat of this podcast. It's more of the very basics in text
checklist
form. Kind of a checklist of what you need to do to be able to culture them. It's enough information to be able to do it. This one's a little bit more fleshed out version of that in audio form.
Okay. And if people have any questions or comments,
they can email me at info@aquarimax.com. That's info@aquarimax.com. Well, thanks, Kelly, for joining me today.
Oh, thank you.
And we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.